buzzer has sounded. We are headed to overtime with William Pattison on Fox Sports Knoxville. This is Fan Run Radio.
And here we go. Live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios, it's overtime with William Pattison, Dawson Wise, and Jace Brown joining you on a Tuesday, the last day of class for us.
Last day was yesterday.
Okay. Way to rain on the parade.
Hey, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It was my last day
raining
ever.
On my parade.
My last day ever.
So it's you guys.
It's yesterday, yeah.
Last class ever,
yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
I've got a year to go, but it's LDOC for all of us. You know, the FDOC is the LDOC. Okay. So LDOC for us, but we are still able to make it here in studio to join you on a Tuesday. We appreciate you listening along with us. 865-288-3131, your number. If you want to hop in and join, plenty to cover as we approach the Red Sox and Braves beginning at 7:20. We'll get you out to Atlanta when that begins. But for the next hour and 20 minutes, hang around with us before we get you out to Atlanta. Plenty to cover. Last night in the NBA, another mile-high meltdown. The Nuggets.
Oh, boy.
Find a way to look even worse. I mean, that's literally the worst of it.
How do you look worse the second time around?
Yeah. That is the most – I tweeted it out. That's the most out of sorts I've seen the Nuggets in probably 2 years. Last night was embarrassing. We'll dive into that a little bit later on. As always, our best bets at the end of the hour. But we begin with this, and it's First Thing First, presented by the 37 Club, which provides access to unique content, exclusive events, private communities, and special discounts on Fan Run merchandise. Join on fanrunradio.com today. And today's First Things First topic is CBS's SEC post-spring power ranking reaction. We have officially reached the worst stretch of the year for college football fans as spring practice is in the rearview mirror and fall camp doesn't start for another 3 months, at least. The actual season is a longer wait away. All we can do at this point is procrastinate and ponder how we think the year will actually unfold before seeing one team suit up against another. Spring does provide plenty of ammunition for predictions and power rankings, and that's why we find ourselves here today. March and April provided at least a peek at what programs will look like in 2024, and the spring transfer window wasn't crazy enough to drastically change anything. It helps that a majority of the SEC spring games were broadcasted in some form or another, so it's easy to get eyes on the entire conference. Now, a couple of teams did a little bit different, like Ole Miss basically played like a flag football game. They had a dunk contest during it. The field was shortened to like 50 yards, so a little bit of a shell, but at least you get to see these guys out there participating. We know in our spring game we covered it very well. A lot of highlights, a lot of great stuff to take away, a couple of things to kind of have your reserves about, but that's like any season, right? So now we kind of ask the question, with all this in the rearview mirror, the spring in the rearview mirror, who stacks up now as we get closer to summer and closer to the start of the new year? And CBS Sports provided their post-spring power rankings, and the Vols' placement might raise a couple of eyebrows. So I'll begin by going down the list they gave. Now, 16 teams in the conference this year with Oklahoma and Texas joining us. So at 16, they had Vanderbilt. No big surprise there. 15 was Mississippi State. Jeff Lebby coming over from Oklahoma, now the head coach for Mississippi State. Not a whole lot of expectations because it's a new coach, new roster, a lot of turnover. Mississippi State at 15. Arkansas at 14. Arkansas loses KJ Jefferson. Sam Pittman returns for another year, but this is a totally different roster once again. Pretty fair ranking for them. 13, South Carolina. They lose Spencer Rattler. Not a great end to the year for them last year. Not a really good season for them after the expectations they have. They land at 13. 12 is Auburn. Hugh Freeze's team, obviously kind of, again, last year, kind of similar to where Mississippi State will be this year, a new coach trying to kind of figure out, okay, what do I have in front of us? What do I need to build on? I think Auburn will be a little bit better than 12, but we'll kind of dive into that here in a minute. 11 is Florida, a very daunting schedule ahead of them this upcoming season. Graham Mertz returns, but they lose a lot of production on the offense and defensive side of the ball. At 10, it's Texas A&M. Mike Elko, an excellent choice for Texas A&M, but a lot of roster turnover, a lot of talented players from those Jimbo Fisher classes hit the portal. They're gone. Number 9 is Kentucky. Brock Vandergrift, the former Georgia quarterback, comes onto the scene. Haven't really seen a whole lot of him. Don't really know what the expectations will be at Kentucky, but they did do a pretty good job in the portal. We'll see where they land. Number 8 is Oklahoma. Jackson Arnold, the new quarterback for them, a very highly touted guy out of high school, very similar to what Nico was. So a little bit more of a question mark because they don't return as much as a Tennessee, but Jackson Arnold should be a really good quarterback to watch for this year. At 7, they have LSU. Garrett Nussmeier, their quarterback, is getting a lot of recognition, a lot of noise, despite being the backup last year. Now, obviously, he's backing up Jaden Daniels, the Heisman Trophy winner. But I think there's a lot of smoke around Garrett Nussmeier. I don't know if that's necessarily warranted, but, again, we'll dive into that here in a minute. Tennessee lands at 6. And some people shake their head at this. Some people say Tennessee should be higher. Again, we'll dive into that here in a minute. But you have Nico Imaliava, the highly touted 5-star quarterback, into the roster now, into the lineup, I should say, as a starter. The number one projected pick in some people's eyes in James Pierce, a really good defensive front. Questions on the O-line, questions in the secondary. But Tennessee is, I think, a little bit better than the 6th best team. Missouri at 5 in front of them is, I think, where a lot of people begin to draw some eyebrows. Obviously, Luther Burden will be one of the best wide receivers in the country this upcoming year, was one of the best wide receivers this past year, and is going to be a guy that's probably going to be a first-rounder next year if he continues to play well and avoids injury. But this team does lose a lot. So that's one of those scenarios where I don't know if Tennessee should necessarily be behind Missouri. Alabama at 4. Very talented roster still. No Nick Saban. Are they able to win the in-game adjustments that Nick Saban was able to have, you know, in the in-game situations? A lot of times I thought Alabama was able to win games just because they had Nick Saban on the sideline, even if they had a lesser talented group. And number 3 is Ole Miss. Lane Kiffin's crew returns a lot. They did well in the portal, getting Princely Emanlian. They got Walter Nolan. They got Juice Wells at wide receiver. This is a very, very stacked group. My question is Lane Kiffin able to win the in-game adjustments? Because we've seen time and time again, he can't beat the good teams, especially when the other coach is one of the best in the country. Finally, we have number 2 is Texas. Quinn Ewers returns, very talented group, made the college football playoff last year, and at number 1, Georgia, pretty self-explanatory with the run they've had, and also returning Carson Beck. So that is the 16 teams power ranking given by CBS. And kind of going around the table here, what are your reactions to this list? I kind of gave my quick ones on each team. But just when you look at that list from top to bottom, what stands out to you? What do you not agree with? What are your thoughts, Dawson?
Overall, there's not a ton of surprises, I don't think. Now, we can dispute, you know, where Tennessee's at, where a couple of these teams are at, but that's very minor. Those are all teams that I think could be in that group. You know, the teams 3 through 6, I think you could probably seed them any way you wanted to, and it might make sense. But you can argue that. Overall, not a ton of surprises. Teams landed about where I expected. This is how, you know, most rankings looked pre-spring. Not a lot changed.
Yeah.
There's not a, you know, that wild outlandish take of, hey, Florida at 4.
Like, yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
Sometimes you see these power rankings and it's like, okay, Georgia, Texas, Ole Miss, Tennessee, Florida, what? Like, they put Florida where they are probably supposed to be, and again, we'll talk to that in a minute. There's not that outlandish team that's too high, too low, in my opinion. There is a lot of credit given to the transfer portal.
Yeah.
A lot. Ole Miss at 3, Texas at 2. They picked up several pieces in the portal. Georgia picked up some pieces in the portal. So did Tennessee, even at 6. Alabama at 4. So a lot of these teams that picked up a lot in the portal are very high. Some of them that lost a lot in the portal, like a Florida, like a South Carolina, are down towards the bottom. So a lot of credit given to the transfer portal, you know, for better or worse. I mean, we know that's how college football is now.
Yeah.
You know, and Ole Miss is who I want to look at here. They were a good SEC team last year. You know, they get a bowl win in a New Year's Six bowl. I don't think they're better than a couple of those teams around them. That, again, we can debate in a minute. A massive boost in the portal. Is it enough to vault them all the way to number three? I don't know if I see it yet. And they had a few key losses as well. Quinshon Judkins departs in the offseason. That's a big hit to their offense. It was supposed to be, you know, very well-rounded, very experienced. Judkins leaves campus in the middle of the offseason. Yeah. That raises some questions for me. And a lot of credit to Kalen DeBoer, a guy who, yes, took his team to the national championship game, but did it in the Pac-12 conference. Did not play SEC football, has not coached SEC football yet, and now has to do the job that nobody in the country envies, and that is following in the footsteps of Nick Saban.
Yeah.
We have talked about this before. This is not a job that anyone wanted, I don't think, or you know, maybe DeBoer wanted the job, but more I think you don't want to be the guy that follows the guy. We talked about that.
No.
And even despite, you know, a flurry of portal departures and high school decommitments, they still place Alabama at four. I'm not sure there's a lot of uncertainty there for the first brand-new staff since 2007.
Yeah, my first reaction was seeing Ole Miss that high. I mean, if you're looking at the power rankings here, we really didn't get to see too much from Ole Miss, especially in that spring game like you talked about. There were a lot of extracurriculars that weren't even football at all that were going on, so I'm not sure if I would be able to boast them that high just because of that. I mean, we, like you said, Dawson, you know – every piece that they brought in through the portal is going to be very pivotal, especially on the defensive end, especially with guys like Walter Nolan added to that lineup. But the biggest surprise to me was seeing that Missouri team that high. You know, they're losing a lot of offensive production because they're losing a guy like Cody Schrader that was sort of a do-it-all back for them last year. And they're losing a bunch of key guys on that defense that wreaked havoc, especially against Tennessee. So, I mean, losing a bunch of guys on that end and only really returning your 1-2 punch of Brady Cook and Luther Burden on the offensive end. I'm not sure why they got, promoted that high, especially this early so far, but haven't really been too impressed beyond that. The rest of the rankings sort of shake out fairly close to what I would have had them at, maybe a couple shuffled here and there, but, you know, with some new coaches coming in, they're settling towards the bottom of the pack, of course, but not too much to complain about on my end.
So moving kind of specifically now to Tennessee, slated at number six behind Missouri. Is it too high? Is it too low? I say it's a little bit too low because I would put them over Missouri. Missouri is going to have to replace five defensive players that went to the NFL draft this past, I guess, 2 weeks ago. So a lot of roster turnover defensively for Missouri. That was kind of one of their strengths towards the end of the year.
Yeah.
You know, obviously their offense was very dynamic with Theo Weiss and Luther Burden, Cody Schrader, Brady Cook. Very good group. But their defense, especially their front, was able to wreak a lot of havoc on SEC offensive lines. They lose a lot. They bring in a five-star defensive lineman and Williams, long last name, can't pronounce it, won't even try, but they do bring in a five-star defensive lineman. Is he ready to come in and play SEC football? So I would put Tennessee over Missouri based on the fact that you have the number one defensive front in college football, the number one defensive player in college football. So now you've got a ferocious and veteran group going up against that offensive line. Tennessee secondary, I think, is the biggest question.
Mm-hmm.
But returning Keenan Pigley is a huge, huge boost for them, especially having a guy that's played so much college football, a guy that knows what he's doing, knows how to read a defense. I think that's very big and hasn't really been talked about a whole lot this offseason. Offensively, you saw what Nico Imaliava can do in his first start as a collegiate player against the number one defense in college football last season in Iowa. Now, Iowa cannot play offense worth a crud, but Nico looked as poised and composed as a fifth-year senior in the pocket last year against the best defense in the country. So I think now you've got a guy that can use his legs and can pinpoint his receivers with great accuracy, something you kind of lacked last year with Milton. And you return guys like Squirrel White, You return guys like Dylan Sampson, and you add guys like Chris Brazel and or Chris Brazel, I should say. Holden stays. Dante Thornton comes back for another year. Brew McCoy comes back for another year. This is a veteran group outside of what you have at quarterback, and not to mention you return Cooper Mays, who, you know, if he played in that Florida game last year in the Swamp, that game could have gone completely different because the offensive line got blown up in the middle. So I think Tennessee deserves a little bit more credit here. I would put them over Missouri. In terms of Alabama, I don't know really what to make of them until we see them out on their out there on the field, because they're one of the most talented rosters in the country. But Nick Saban, him being removed, are they still able to have those in-game adjustments that Saban was so good at and the preparation, attention to detail that Saban was so good at? Kalen DeBoer is a great coach. He deserves the opportunity. He just put his team in the national championship last year. But as you said, Dawson, this is SEC football. This is not the Pac-12 where you can, you know, run up the scoreboard on a poor defense and play, you know, Oregon, or even if you wanted to consider USC as a good team last year. I think Tennessee should be above Missouri. I would not mind them going over Alabama. Too high, too low for Tennessee.
Too low. Look, power rankings are all based on potential at this point in the year. So if you're basing it purely on, you know, what you've seen in spring and what potential you see, I don't see how Tennessee is not – I would have them at number four. I don't see how you don't have them at least over Missouri just based on potential. Too much, you know, adding talent that Tennessee did in this offseason to address needs that they had. Tennessee added two major targets for Nico in Brazil and Matthews in the offseason. You reloaded the depleted defensive backfield. You lost a bunch of guys in the portal or to graduation, but you reloaded pretty well between freshmen and the portal. You added defensive front help, and now you've got the most depth in that defense that Heupel's ever had. This is his fourth year. This is going to be his deepest defense. I think that's fair to say. I would have put Tennessee at four. Again, obviously I'm going to rank them probably a little bit higher because I'm in Knoxville, Tennessee. Right. I think that's probably fair. But Bama, a new staff, and they've had a lot of movement. I understand their roster is still very talented, but there's a ton of portal movement for them. Guys coming in, guys leaving then coming back again for some reason in the case of Caden Proctor. You know, along with, you know, they're coming off a disappointing year and they lose some pieces off that team. And how are you going to replace Nick Saban? That's kind of why maybe I'm giving DeBoer not enough credit. Maybe I should give him more credit. But again, no SEC experience takes that down a little bit for me. Missouri loses way too much for us to be behind them. Cody Schrader is the reason Missouri beat Tennessee last year, and he is gone now. They also lose a ton on the defensive front. We mentioned Darius Robinson, their main guy on the defensive line. He's gone. Several other pieces gone. So for me, you don't get back enough production to put Missouri ahead of Tennessee. Maybe too much stock in this year's Tennessee team, but feels like even from what we saw from Nico in Orlando, it was limited, but it was effective enough. And the things we've seen so far from these newcomers already this year, I feel like we should be ranked higher than we are, whether that's four or five.
Yeah, I think Tennessee is a bit too low. I'm not sure if I would jump them up into the top four just yet. I think we still got a couple questions, like William was saying, in the defensive backfield that still do need to be answered. I think a reason maybe they did land up towards six was because of, you know, the performance in the spring game, especially with that offensive line. Now, again, without Cooper Mays, it's going to look a little bit iffy. But, I mean, even with that, you're bringing in a bunch of four or five star guys on that offensive line. You should be able to put out at least a product worthy of playing an SEC defense, and that really wasn't put out there on display during the orange and white game. We also saw the low stock of the running backs, especially with all the injuries right now. I think that might have also been a tick there, because we don't know if we're going to be seeing a start of the season where Cam Seldon or Peyton Lewis are either healthy, so it might take a couple weeks into the season for that to turn around. So I understand the number six at there, and now especially with the transfer portal reopening after the spring games, you know, you lose a guy like Elijah Herring in the middle of that defense. That's a huge hit for a guy that led the team in tackles last season, and for him to, you know, have to leave that defense, it's such a huge hit. I get why Tennessee is at number six, but with, like y'all have said, the amount of players and big impact guys that Missouri lost over last year and really didn't seem to replace too much, whether that be through the portal or just recruiting out of high school, I think Tennessee should jump the Tigers.
Okay, so if you could redo the list, and this is kind of just our power rankings personally, I'll begin 16, Vanderbilt, self-explanatory there. Mississippi State at 15, just don't know much about them just yet with Jeff Lebby just getting there. Arkansas at 14, quarterback problem, got to replace KJ Jefferson. Tough to see really what they look like. Also, did y'all see who they're adding? A former MLB player. Did y'all not see this?
No. No.
The guy's 28, and this is kind of going off real quick, but 28-year-old that was a four-star in high school, was committed to Nebraska, got drafted by the Milwaukee Brewers, and today he committed to Arkansas, is yet to use any college eligibility, last played for the Miami Marlins. It's going to be a 28-year-old wide receiver for Arkansas next year.
He's talking about some experience.
He's doing some side quests out here.
Yeah. Talk about some experience in that receiver room.
Yeah. But continuing, Arkansas's got a 28-year-old, but we'll continue. 13, South Carolina, very similar, new quarterback. I don't necessarily know if I trust Shane Beamer. I think this is a hot seat year for him. 12, I'm going to go Florida, really tough schedule. They returned Graham Mertz, who was actually really good last year, but they lose a lot on both sides of the ball. 11, I'm going to go Auburn. I trust in Hugh Freeze. I think this will be a better year for him, but still a lot of unknown about that quarterback room. At 10, I'm going to go Kentucky. I like Brock Vandergrift, but again, not a lot of experience. And last time they brought in a big-time quarterback transfer in Devin Leary, didn't really turn out the way many people thought it would. 9, Texas A&M. I trust what's their name of their coach?
Tim Elko.
Elko. I trust Mike Elko.
And
what he does. When he was at A&M, they'd won the top defenses in the country when he was a defensive coordinator there. So I think he'll get back to what A&M football has been over the last couple of years, at least competitive in the SEC. LSU at 8. I'm not buying the Grant Nussmeier stuff as much as everyone else, so I'll put them at 8. 7, Oklahoma. I think Oklahoma will surprise some people this year. A very competent team in the Big 12. I think they'll make the jump pretty well to the SEC. 6, Missouri. A lot of questions about that defensive front, but Brady Cook and Luther Burden will be a great duo. Tennessee at 5, Nico Amaliava. It's the time to start getting to know how to use or how to say his name, because you'll be saying it a lot this season on top of a top defensive line and one of the best players in the country defensively in James Pierce. Number 4, I'm going to go Alabama, just based on the talent they have on that roster and trusting that DeBoer can carry over the success that he had at Washington. 3, I'm going to go Ole Miss. I really do trust this Ole Miss team. I think they're one of the best rosters in the SEC. Now it comes down to, can Lane Kiffin get it done? 2, Texas, pretty self-explanatory. Quinn Ewers returns, really good defense, really good offensive weapons. In Georgia, number 1, returning Carson back. We know how good of a coach Kirby Smart is. Kind of got shorted out of the playoff last year. I expect for them to have a chip on their shoulder this upcoming season. That's my power rankings. Dawson, what do you say?
16, Vanderbilt. Again, self-explanatory. 15, Mississippi State. That's a really tough scenario for Jeff Lebby.
Yeah.
I think they will have some more offensive success this year than they did with Zach Arnett, but I mean, again, not a great roster. He's not inheriting a good situation at all, so it's going to take him some time. I think he'll be successful there, but it'll take a while. 14, I had South Carolina. I don't like their quarterback situation just a little bit more than I don't like Arkansas's, because South Carolina also loses their weapons as well. Leggett goes to the draft, Juice Wells goes to Ole Miss, and all of a sudden there's no star wide receiver in Columbia either.
Yeah.
So now you're on a new quarterback with no weapons at all. And again, I think you're right. I think it's a hot seat year for Shane Beamer. Arkansas at 13, replacing KJ Jefferson's hard. They got a transfer in that looked good in their spring game.
Yeah.
That's kind of why I gave him an edge over South Carolina. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the guy's name off the top of my head.
Taylen Green.
There you go. So he looked good in their spring game, so I give him a little bit more credit. Florida at 12, again, probably the most daunting, awful schedule in the SEC that I think I've ever seen. An absolute gauntlet. That's just tough for anybody. I think DJ Lagway is the starter in Gainesville by halfway through the season.
Really?
I think so.
Wow.
Because it's nothing against Graham Mertz. It's more just, I think this is a hot seat year for Billy Napier as well. Is
so
that fair?
He kind of want, well, it, yes, it is.
So you're saying
he kind of wants to show what the future?
Kind of the second things start to go wrong, especially in that gauntlet of a schedule, I think he pulls the trigger maybe a little bit too early and just throws Lagway in the game. Does what Josh Heupel did not. Now, granted, we're glad he did not do that, but I think he does what Heupel does not, because his situation is just not nearly as good. Auburn at 11, I trust Hugh Freeze too. This will be a better year, but I don't like their schedule, and they've got to build a few more pieces, and I just really don't like Peyton Thorne as an SEC quarterback. I'm not going to lie. I don't know. Kentucky at 10, I debated between them and A&M. I don't know what Vandegrift's going to give Kentucky because we didn't see enough of him at Georgia. So I don't know what he's going to give them. It's another transfer quarterback for Kentucky, by the way. This is becoming a bit of a pattern in Lexington to have transfer quarterbacks. So I put Kentucky there, kind of just plateauing for them. A&M at 9, Elko, again, another guy I think is going to be pretty successful. But don't know what we're getting there yet because, again, another guy that was there as a coordinator has not been there as a head coach yet. So we'll wait and see. Oklahoma at 8 for me. I didn't quite jump them to 7 because of the question mark with Jackson Arnold. I think Venables has done a good job there for all intents and purposes. I mean, had them ranked last year at one point. Has already quickly rebuilt that roster. So they're going to be good. That's a big test for Tennessee early in the season, too, on the road in a tough environment. So I think they'll be good, but I can't put them in front of LSU yet. So I have LSU at 7. I'm buying more into the Nussmeier smoke than maybe you are, a little bit. I think he'll be just fine, especially in an offense like Brian Kelly has instilled in Baton Rouge. So I have LSU at 7. Alabama is for me at 6. Mm. I debated between them and Missouri. I'm just not giving Kalen DeBoer a lot of credit. I'm asking him to prove it in the SEC. If he does, then my rankings will change. And if he doesn't, then they'll stay at 6. Very talented roster. Just don't know what we're getting out of Kalen DeBoer yet in Alabama. Missouri at 5, lost too much production, but still going to be a good team. Brady Cook's still very good at football. So is Luther Burden, and so is that defense. That defense is going to reload just fine in Missouri. So they'll be at number 5. Tennessee at 4, kind of covered that already. Added too much for me to drop them below 4.
Yeah.
And they're prepped for a good year. We saw enough of Nico for me to have enough faith in them. And then the top 3 are self-explanatory. Ole Miss was the winner in the portal this year by far. Their defense is going to be almost scarier than their offense is, and that's saying a lot with a Lane Kiffin-coached offense. Texas at 2, Ewers is back, most of their production's back, and Sark had him in the college football playoff in really about one or two possessions from a national championship game.
Yeah.
So I like them at 2, and then it's pretty self-explanatory with Kirby Smart at number 1. With Georgia, they return almost all their production, as well as their starting quarterback Carson Beck.
Yeah, I'm going to throw Vandy at 16 like everybody and Mississippi State at 15. Both of those are, you know, not great spots to be in, whether it be a new coach or a guy like Clark Leo over at Vandy. He wanted to make that program into a national contender within 5 years. It feels like he's hit the reverse button on that. They just really have not taken any steps forward. At 14, I've got South Carolina. I think swap them between Arkansas just because of the quarterback problem like y'all have hit on. I've got Arkansas at 13. They've at least found an answer, it looks like, with Taylen Green. It looks like he can bring some explosiveness to that offense. I also had a running back in Jaquindon Jackson also play well in the spring game. I really like to see what he put out there. And like y'all have said, Florida at 12, I think that schedule is a little too daunting. They've got plenty of talent, but I just don't think, you know, with how Billy Napier has been coaching these last 2 years, has been very underwhelming. Very hot seedy once again this year for them. Auburn at 11, Hugh Freeze, I think is taking a step in the right direction with Auburn. I think he just needs a couple more years under his belt in the SEC for his second tenure, and I think he'll be right back in the mix. Got Kentucky at 10 just because of Vandegrift. I mean, he was a 5-star guy out of high school. Just haven't seen that much potential. I think Kentucky added a couple of nice pieces in the portal, but, you know, just to take a jab, Gerald Mincy was not one of them. And moving on to number 9, I've got A&M. I trust Elko and what he's got sitting over there. I mean, like y'all said, sort of cleaned house whenever Jimbo left with all the recruits and stuff. But I think with the base that you have there and the amount of money, I think A&M will be right back in the mix sooner than later. A little bit controversial here. I'm going to throw Missouri at 8. It's sort of, you know, throwing me off with just how much they lost on the defensive end. I think it'll be really hard to replace them, as well as their production that they saw out of Cody Schrader. I mean, we saw him go for over 300 all-purpose against Tennessee, and I'm not sure if they're going to find somebody that can do that once again against anybody in the league. Now towards number 7, I'm going to throw LSU at number 7. I'm also not too big on the Nussmeier train, but I think Brian Kelly will be able to compete a little bit more than Coach Drinkwitz's Tiger team. And with that, I'll throw Oklahoma at 6. I think with, you know, Brent Venables being at the helm, he's always going to be able to recruit very well in the defensive end. I'm really excited to see Jackson Arnold slot into that starting quarterback role. So, sort of feels like a Nico, like you were saying, just really waiting to take his first snaps at the helm. It should be a really exciting season over in Norman. Tennessee at number 5, we've hit on it a bunch. Returning a bunch on the offensive side, as in weaponry, added plenty that they needed to on the offensive and defensive side. Just really need to see that go into action. I've got Ole Miss at number four, just because of all the additions in the portal, and you know, with Lane Kiffin at the helm on the offensive end, it's always going to be explosive. But I still don't think he's going to be able to get the job done against Bama. I've got them slotted at number three. I think Kalen DeBoer has done more with less during his tenure at Washington. I think that's something to look at as well, being surrounded by with the talent base that he has over at Alabama right now. I think it's really going to be hard to mess up. I think, you know, Alabama will take a step back, just not as far as some people do think. And like you guys have said, I've got Texas at number two, just with that offense and the great defense with what Sark has put together. I think they're going to roll right into SEC play pretty smoothly. And Georgia at number one, they added a guy like Trevor Etienne just to already that very dangerous offense should be a well-oiled machine once again.
All right, so those are our SEC post-spring power rankings. Obviously, we've got a little bit of a ways away till the football season officially kicks off, but post-spring, that's where these teams currently stand. I guess we'll do it again as we get closer to the season kicking off. When we return, however, we'll switch over to the association where the Nuggets are in trouble. Are the Nuggets cooked? We'll answer that when we come back on Overtime.
Ever been the coach who realized the team's gear just wasn't up to par? Well, if I'm being honest, that was me. Just a downright irresponsible and plain bad coach. Then SM Athletics changed the game. I want you to picture this. I walk into their store, a coach with a vision. SM Athletics didn't just see a coach. They saw a team's potential. And they delivered custom uniforms so striking. Our team's spirit soared. From cutting-edge apparel to top-notch equipment, SM Athletics transformed our presence. No more unreliable online orders or envying the other team's style. SM Athletics stands for quality, design, and on-time delivery every time. Coaches, elevate your team with SM Athletics. Call 865-966-3434 or visit smathletics.com. Get the best for your team, delivered right and on time. So, elevate your team's game by contacting SM Athletics today.
Looking for a luxury RV getaway? Then come see Two Rivers Landing RV Resort. Just imagine a personal oasis on the French Broad River with outstanding amenities just minutes from the Great Smoky Mountains. Enjoy the quiet, private setting on sites offering unexpected beauty and tranquility. Unplug from everyday life and plug in to the serenity of life on the river, big mountain skies, and bucket list sunsets at Two Rivers Landing RV Resort. Serenity in the heart of it all. Visit tworiversrvresort.com.
Rev up your savings at Volunteer Auto Group, your one-stop destination for quality vehicles at unbeatable prices. Cruise through their vast selection of pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. They've got the flexible financing options that make it easy for you to drive home today. Volunteer Auto Group, where every deal's a winner. 1501 Callahan Drive. Check them out online at volauto.com and tell them Fan Run sent you.
It's baseball season, meaning summer's just around the corner, and your friends at Fan Run Radio are here to help you kick off summer right at the ballpark. Join us for our first ever Fan Run night at Smoky Stadium on May 30th. Besides the game with Chattanooga, there'll be in-game activities, $3 beers for Thirsty Thursday, and you'll get to do it all with the Fan Run team. Also, 37 club members get free admission to the game. So keep it locked in on Fan Run Radio for more details to follow, and save the date for May 30th.
All right, back here on Overtime on a Tuesday. We appreciate you joining and listening along with us. Time to switch over to the association, where we have another mile-high meltdown, and we ask the question, are the Nuggets cooked? Or as Jace said, are they burnt? The Wolves are up 2-0 on the defending champion Nuggets after dominating in Denver, winning Game 2 106-80. Game 1 was an experience, but also a possible fluke, a glitch in the matrix that would be fixed by Michael Malone and Nikola Jokic recalibrating how to attack the Wolves' defense. Throw in Rudy Gobert missing Game 2 due to the birth of his first child, and things were ripe for being even 1-1 heading back to Minneapolis. Surely we'd see the Wolves feeling good about stealing one in Denver. Instead, the Wolves are heading home and up 2-0, while the defending champions are officially on unsteady ground. Last night didn't even take a heroic effort from Anthony Edwards. He had 27, but so did Karl Anthony Towns. This game was won on defense, and the Timberwolves swarmed the Nuggets every possession. Minnesota shut down the vaunted Nuggets once again, giving Denver just its third pair of back-to-back games below 100 points all season long. My takeaways from this game are this. Minnesota's defense is what is winning this series. Jamal Murray, every time he brings it up the court, is immediately met by Jaden McDaniels or Nikhil Alexander-Walker, or even Mike Conley's been very active defensively as well, despite him being towards the tail end of his career. And inside, Rudy Gobert doesn't even play, who just won the Defensive Player of the Year a couple of seconds ago. He wasn't even playing. Yet Naz Reid and Karl Anthony Towns do a great job communicating to help kind of tag team Jokic. And the Nuggets looked out of sorts. 16 turnovers last night for them. They're averaging 14 turnovers in this series, shooting just 40% from the field and 36% from three. This is not the Nuggets team we know because of how good this Timberwolves defense has been. So they're not able to get any rhythm offensively. And the Nuggets and the Timberwolves seem to do whatever they want offensively. Whether it's Anthony Edwards taking Kentavious Caldwell-Pope over and over and over again, that looks like that'll be one of the adjustments defensively for the Nuggets because it hasn't worked through two games. And there's so much space, especially last night with no Rudy Gobert. The Timberwolves were really just playing five out, and you've got guys that can shoot around the perimeter, which I think is, you know, what works in the NBA. We see the Boston Celtics do that all year, and that's why they're the best team in the league. But Minnesota has had their way with everything. And at one point in that game last night, it was a 30-point game, 80-50. It just, you know that they wear the 52-80 on their uniforms, the Nuggets do. They took that to a different level last night. They decided to replicate that in the scoreboard. But it goes back to the Timberwolves' defense and how aggressive they are and how they're setting the tone. Their physicality is setting the tone in this series, and the Nuggets don't have a response for it. So unless the Nuggets are able to, A, find a way to fend off this physicality by getting to their spots better, Jokic is getting bounced around, not able to get to his spots like he was able to do in that Lakers series. And as a result, there's no rhythm offensively for the Nuggets. Jamal Murray, outside of him, you know, throwing the heating pack, we'll talk about that here in a second, and having kind of a mini aneurysm on the court, you know, he's been terrible offensively. Shooting 28% from the field, and averaging 12.5 points per game. So they've got to find a way to break the physicality and get back into their groove and play their basketball, the Nuggets basketball that we've seen over the last 2 years that has won them championships and made them the best team in the league. They're in trouble. I don't think they're cooked, but they're definitely in the oven.
First takeaway, and I wrote it like this, all caps, now the Nuggets are in trouble. After game one, I did not think they were. Now they are. I figured you would get their best counterpunch in game two. I said that yesterday, and you just did not. You manage 80 points on your home floor in a game that felt like not really a must win, but it felt like you had to have that one to kind of maintain yourself in the series. Really poor effort all around. And now it's kind of time to start hitting the panic button. I did not think they'd lose. I didn't think they'd lose one game at home, let alone both, and let alone in dominant fashion. I mean, it was never in doubt last night for Denver. Last night I said Ant would come back to earth in this series. I said eventually he's going to regress back to the mean. He's not going to score 43 a night. Well, he regressed back to earth, and it did not matter.
Yeah.
He scored 27, and it did not matter. This is scary for Denver. If you're only giving up 27 and you're losing by 26 still, that's a problem. I mean, you got a serious problem. I mean, any team now that potentially has to see Minnesota, I mean, I'd be worried about this because now you're getting, now I won't say average performances from Ant, but his average performance, and you're still watching them win by almost 30 points. I thought Minnesota would fall back to earth a little bit after game one. They would get a good counterpunch. Denver would settle in and adjust, and they just did not. And that should say a lot about where this team is at. And the question I ask now is, you know, after you lost by 26 on your home court, you're now down 2-0, headed on the road. how in the world do you respond? And Gobert, by the way, was out. His child was born yesterday, so he didn't even play, and you still lost by 26. Yeah. What can you do to attack this team? If there's no Gobert and you still can't find any rhythm offensively, there's a problem. Jokic, 16 points, unacceptable from a guy like him. Jamal Murray, an inexcusable 8 plus the one assist on the heating pack.
there you go.
Look, when Aaron Gordon is your leading scorer, there's a serious problem, and Denver has a serious problem.
Yeah, I think the first thing I wrote down was, you know, the panic button has to be hit at this point. You know, with the defense that was flying around for the Wolves yesterday, it felt like everybody was involved. It didn't matter how many people deep they got in off the bench. Everybody was producing on the defensive end, and, you know, especially like y'all have said, without your defensive player of the year, Rudy Gobert, it was just tenacious. It was nasty. It was ferocious. Anything you want to throw in there, that's exactly what it was. The Nuggets could not get anything rolling on the offensive end. Jamal Murray started 0 of 11 from the floor, you know, which, you know, if that's your number two scoring option on that team, that is absolutely unacceptable this late in the season and this far into the postseason. I mean, this is when you're really supposed to be hitting your stride and really starting to, you know, separate yourself from the pack. If you would. So, you know, without that, without being or without having the successful pick and roll that we saw work against the Lakers all season long and in the postseason and just about against everybody else that they played, without that rolling for them, it made them look uncomfortable on both ends of the court. They couldn't find an answer for Anthony Edwards, who, again, like y'all have said, didn't have the greatest night or sort of came off of cloud nine, still put together 27 points. And, you know, with the spread out floor like they had, it was just a nightmare from the jump.
So at one point, Jamal Murray threw a heat pack from the bench, as Dawson alluded to, the assist of the night for him. threw a heat pack from the bench onto the court after disagreeing with a foul call, or a no call, that is. The Nuggets had been West favorites all season long, but championship pedigree is out the window. They've officially been thrown to the Wolves, no pun intended. And last night, they cracked. Like, first quarter, Mike Malone is giving referee Mark Davis an earful. I mean, a faceful, really.
Running out onto the court.
Almost a Tony Vitello chest bump.
I was going to say, it reminded me of Tony Vitello. So, and Buzz Peterson coming out to half court to call a timeout.
So that happens like 6 minutes in. You've got Jamal Murray throwing items onto the court. You have him
the
doing
money sign at the
money
refs.
Sign,
oh
which
goodness.
Rudy Gobert got $100,000 fine for 2 months ago for doing the money sign. The championship pedigree and composure was completely lost last night. Now a lot of people are starting to call for Jamal Murray to be suspended. I don't think he should be suspended. I just think there should be a fine because, look, this is the playoffs. He's not a first-time offender. Like, I was having this conversation last night with someone, and they're like, well, Draymond Green got suspended when he did these things. Well, first off, Draymond Green has a reputation of this. Draymond Green also, if he was alluding to like 2016 and in the final series, Draymond Green had exceeded the flagrant and technical foul limit for the playoffs. That's why he was suspended for a game. Usually, you don't see suspensions unless it's like a flagrant 2 foul or a, you know, double, you know, just a little bit more extreme than throwing a heat pad. I know that could have injured someone, but he's not a first time offender. I think it's just out of frustration. I would just fine him, you know, $100,000 and call it a day. I don't think he should be suspended. What do you say, Dawson?
I'll sit in the middle. I think he should have been thrown out last night from the game, from the bench. I think they should have probably tossed him, either given him a tech, like a double tech, and tossed him is what I think they should have done. Now that they haven't, I'm kind of on the side that they probably should sit him for a game. I don't think they will. I think it'll just be a fine, and they'll move on. That's all the reports today, is that he's going to get fined, and they're going to move on, because you don't like playoff series to be decided when a guy isn't available. Now, you could have the debate of, if Jamal Murray plays, are they going to win the series anyway? I don't know at this point. With 8 points last night, obviously not going to.
Hell, they might play better.
Are they going to miss his 8-point production? I don't know. But look, you got to be able to discourage this in the future. You can't have guys throwing this stuff on the court. It landed at these guys' feet in a live play. I think I would have felt a little bit different if it had been, you know, after a whistle on a free throw. If you guys are just standing around, okay. These guys are up under the basket, laying the ball up. If Towns slips on that, you know, maybe somebody gets hurt. I understand nobody didn't. So I'm going to sit in the middle. They should have punished him last night. Mm-hmm. I don't know how nobody saw it with the amount of cameras we have in the building. Yeah. It's pretty obvious that he just hucks this heating pack onto the floor,
yeah.
And you can pretty well tell in the officials, it's like they didn't even notice.
Yeah.
I mean, we have enough cameras, enough eyeballs. You should be able to do it, you know, punish it at the moment. Since they didn't, I wouldn't be offended if they suspended him, but I don't think they're going to.
Yeah, I don't think they should suspend him. I think, you know, like you were saying, Dawson, if they were going to do anything, they might as well have just tossed him last night and just got him right back in the mix for game three over in Minnesota. But, you know, overall, I don't think anything more than a fine should be thrown his way just because, you know, like y'all have alluded to, it is the postseason. Tensions are going to be running high regardless of whether it's a good call or a bad call. Some things do boil over here and there, and you know, I'm not sure if he exactly meant to throw the heating bat on the floor. Maybe he tried to, you know, get it towards the cameraman or something like that, and a little press row. I'm not sure if he meant to, you know, slide it under somebody's foot almost, but you know, I think, you know, you got to be a little bit more you got to have a little bit more leeway here, especially in the postseason, just because tensions are high, the stakes are higher than you know, any other time during the season. So I think they let him off with a fine and, you know, move on from there.
The T-Wolves have done a really good job defensively, as I mentioned earlier. I think it's what's really thrown off the Nuggets so far. Again, you know, we talked about it with the Indiana series, right? You know, kind of trying to throw off Jalen Brunson. It's really hard to do that by, you know, pressing him full court. However, the Timberwolves have the length to be able to do it, and they, you know, trap Murray in the corner, you know, at the top of half court multiple times, causing turnovers. There were a lot of just bad turnovers last night from the Nuggets.
Yes.
Trying to fit it into windows that were not there. Jokic, Murray, Michael Porter Jr., multiple times had bad passes. And you got to credit what the Timberwolves are doing with that length and size and being in the correct position. I think the Nuggets, in order to get their swagger back, have got to get into position offensively early and often, pick their spots to where they can roll their offense like they were able to do in the Lakers series, where the Lakers really weren't able to push them around defensively like the Timberwolves have done so far in this one. So I think it's picking your spots and then running your offense from there, allowing you to get your offense going before the Timberwolves can set up their defense and push you off their game. When we come back, we'll give our best bets of the night. Stay right here on Overtime.
When it's past high noon, it's time for a vodka soda made with a vodka you actually heard of. I'm talking White Claw vodka soda made with White Claw premium vodka. JB Smooth only drinks vodka soda made with the world's smoothest vodka.
And you can too. Pick you up a bottle of the Triple Wave filtered vodka that's been distilled 5 times. White Claw Premium Vodka comes in 4 flavors. Black cherry, mango, pineapple, and just vodka. You haven't had vodka like this. No one has. White Claw Premium Vodka. Please drink responsibly.
Life is more fun with a Good Life checking account, offering extra benefits, including bank travel. Join us for a trip to Mackinac Island for a stay at the beautiful Grand Hotel. Travel with us to southern Utah to witness the enormous, colorful, and unusual rock formations. Or join us on one of our many day trips. We're always on the go.
Citizens National Bank. Banking never felt so good.
Member FDIC.
Van Run Radio is proud to present the 37 Club, an exclusive community of the lifeblood of Van Run Radio. You, our biggest supporters. With a membership to the 37 Club, you receive exclusive content like podcasts, blogs, and videos, giveaways, and access to exclusive merchandise and events.
Ever been the coach who realized the team's gear just wasn't up to par? Well, if I'm being honest, that was me. Just a downright irresponsible and plain bad coach. Then SM Athletics changed the game. I want you to picture this. I walk into their store, a coach with a vision. SM Athletics didn't just see a coach. They saw a team's potential. And they delivered custom uniforms so striking. Our team's spirit soared. From cutting-edge apparel to top-notch equipment, SM Athletics transformed our presence. No more unreliable online orders or envying the other team's style. SM Athletics stands for quality, design, and on-time delivery every time. Coaches, elevate your team with SM Athletics. Call 865 866-3434 or visit smathletics.com. Get the best for your team, delivered right and on time. So, elevate your team's game by contacting SM Athletics today.
Making a better vodka soda ain't rocket science. You just gotta start with a better vodka. And then voila, you get White Claw Vodka Soda. Your taste buds are about to get a PhD in deliciousness. JB Smooth only drinks vodka soda made with the world's smoothest vodka.
Try the all-new White Claw Vodka Soda. Pick up a variety pack of their four delicious flavors. Only 100 calories, 4.5% alcohol, and 2 grams of sugar. White Claw Vodka Soda. Please drink responsibly. Are you ready to play hard and work harder? Are you looking to take the next step in your career with a company who celebrates hard work and appreciates those who do it? Then it's time to join the movement at Axel Logistics. Axel is looking to expand their award-winning sales team with logistics consultants who are outgoing, ambitious, and thrive in a fast-paced environment. If that sounds like you, visit axellogistics.com to learn more. Make sure you tell them you heard about it on Fan Run Radio. Axel Logistics, now is your time.
Rev up your savings at Volunteer Auto Group, your one-stop destination for quality vehicles at unbeatable prices. Cruise through their vast selection of pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. They've got the flexible financing options that make it easy for you to drive home today. Volunteer Auto Group, where every deal's a winner. 1501 Callahan Drive. Check them out online at volauto.com and tell them Fan Run sent you.
Are you tired of the same boring workouts that don't get you the results that you want? Check out Hot Works. With infrared light therapy and personalized wellness options, you'll be able to get the perfect workout every time. With the hot yoga or any of the other isometric options at Hot Works, you'll feel the detoxification right away. Hop on over to 10839 Hardin Valley Road or visit any of the other Knoxville locations to get started on your personalized journey.
Who's ready to watch your Southern League champs take the field for a fantastic 2024 season? All season long, your favorite nights are back, like Star Wars, Margaritaville, 4th of July, UT Night, and so much more. And don't forget, awesome daily promotions too, like All You Can Eat Wednesday, Thirsty Thursday, Summer Fireworks Series, and Family Fun Day Sunday. Get your tickets for your favorite night now at SmokiesBaseball.com.
All right, back here on Overtime on a Tuesday. Time for our best bets of the night. A couple matchups in the association. The first game of the Celtics and Cavs series and the first game of the Mavericks and Thunder series. I'll begin in the Celtics-Cavs game. I'm going to go Cavs team total under 98.5. This is a really good defensive team in Boston. And we saw in last series when Cleveland went on the road up against a really good defense in Orlando, they struggled. And the Celtics are one of the best defenses in the league. I think it's a really tough matchup for them, especially after just playing a game 7 on Sunday. The Celtics are more well-rested, better spot playing at home. Cavs team total under 98.5.
Okay, well, I kind of went the other way. Cavs plus 12.5 tonight, and Donovan Mitchell plus 30-plus points. Mm. Look, I don't have enough faith that Boston covers this big a spread. I hate spreads this big, especially in the postseason. How much energy is Cleveland going to have after a Game 7? We'll have to wait and see. I think if they do make this one interesting, it will be because of Donovan Mitchell. That's kind of been if he goes, they go. If he doesn't, they don't kind of thing. In the Magic series as well, when he had his big performances, they won games on home floor. They made games close in Orlando. So they need him to have a big night. I like him to have a big night and Cleveland to make this one scrappy.
Keeping it simple as well, I'm straight up just taking Donovan Mitchell 30-plus points over against Boston. I think, you know, with the high-tier performances that we saw, especially with that 50-game performance in Game 6, maybe he gets a little bit more help from some of the role guys. I know Jared Allen is still, I believe, out tonight. So I think he's really going to have to step up for this Cleveland team if they even want a chance in this series, and I think he starts off on the right foot tonight.
All right, this is kind of a best bet, but it's not just for tonight. It's the Mavericks to win the series. I think the Mavericks do win this series. Young teams like the Thunder don't usually advance past the second round. So even if the Thunder get a win tonight, I would take Mavericks at probably better odds to win the series. But if you want to go ahead and get it tonight, you can. Mavs to win the series. The combination of Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic has hit its peak right now. It's working better than it ever has. And they've got the collective pieces like a P.J. Washington, like a Derek Jones Jr., to get it going and help spread the floor as well. So maybe the Mavericks don't win tonight. But I do like them to win the series, so if you want to take it now, or you can wait till after tonight's results. But the Mavs to win the series.
I did a little two-leg parlay here on player props for the Mavericks tonight. Luka, 30-plus points, and Kyrie, 2-plus threes. Luka is averaging 34 points per game against the Oklahoma City Thunder this season. Safe to assume he'll be ready to go again tonight and gets over that 30 number. And Kyrie has two or more three-pointers in five of his last six games. That's very safe. There's a four-leg parlay, a suggested one on FanDuel that was a little bit less safe than that, but I just like those two as Dallas tries to steal away game one in Oklahoma City.
I've got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander going for over 40.5 points, rebounds, and assists. I'm going to take that tonight. I think being at home, it's really going to help him out. He's got plenty of guys around him, like a Chet Holmgren, that can get the ball in the bucket whenever they get close to the cup. So I think, you know, being on that sort of thing, on the assist side, I think he'll be all right. We know he's been able to put up some great rebound number. He's sort of sometimes it feels like a Josh Hart, a sort of a, you know, crash the glass small guy. So I think we see more than that from him tonight.
At first, I thought you were saying over 40.5 points.
No,
and I was like, wow,
that's bold. I mean, that's, hey, that's some good little money value.
Against a team that got better defensively at the trade deadline, that's bold.
Yeah, I had to wait for the rebounds assist part.
Yeah.
All right, those are our best bets of the night. We'll see you on the other side and get you ready for the Red Sox and Braves set to have a first pitch at 7:20. We'll have In the News with Dawson Wise when we return.